Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Appropriate Care Measures Identified Participant Group conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Bill Gardner. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Jai. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of iPro, I'd like to welcome you to today's call. The topic for the call today is publicly reported measures in the electronic medical record. As indicated by the information that has been sent, you should have in front of you an agenda, an evaluation form, and a PowerPoint presentation from Kingsburg Jewish Medical Center. For today's call, we have invited the ACM-IPG participants and the facilities participating in the Health Information Technology IPG. For the Health Information Technology IPG, iPro is collaborating with hospitals who wish to plan or are in the process of planning for implementation of the following technologies: computerized physician order entry, barcoding at the point of care, or telehealth. And we thought that this would be a good opportunity for the ACM-IPG facilities to learn how one facility incorporated their measures into their computerized system, and for the HIT-IPG to learn how a computerized system was planned for, designed for, and built over the past 10 years. Before we begin with today's presentation, I would like to remind those individuals in the ACM-IPG of the upcoming remeasurement period. As you know, the baseline quarter for the ACM score is quarter 4, 2004. And the CMS contract defines the remeasurement time period as the latest quarter for which validated data are available prior to approximately November 2007. Realistically, this would most likely be the first quarter of 2007. But please note, if by perchance quarter 4 2006 quarter is used, you have already begun seeing patients on October 1st of this year. And we want to stress how important it is that you have or are addressing your systems issues and implementing improvements related to the improving the core measure set. To date, you have received two ACM reports specific to your facility, which have clearly identified the areas of need and improvement. In addition, these reports have identified the AMI, heart failure, and pneumonia component scores for the baseline quarter and clearly demonstrate a target for you to achieve. And we hope that you are working towards these goals. At the present time, I expect another ACM report to be produced and distributed this week. The next item on the agenda is a presentation by individuals from Kingsburg Jewish Medical Center titled Publicly Reported Measures and the Electronic Medical Record. Kingsburg Jewish is a 326-bed acute care hospital located in Brooklyn, New York. Based upon a vision and commitment on the part of senior leaders of the organization, they initially purchased a patient care system in 1996 and 1997 and implemented a computerized physician order entry system on September 17th of 1998. They threw the switch, so to speak, on one nursing unit and gradually phased in other areas in the facility over an 18-month time period. Since their initial implementation, they have worked to expand their computerized medical system and with the assistance of their clinical improvement department. Nympha Mindell is Vice President and Chief Information System Officer, is an RN, and has directed the work of the Information Systems Department in helping to build their clinical system. As demonstrated by the presenters on today's call, clinicians have had a significant input into the design of the system and are clearly knowledgeable in its application. In the early part of 2004, the Core Measure Project was formed to incorporate all of the publicly reported measures into their clinical system. Information Systems met with the clinicians on an ongoing basis to design and create a user-friendly system for documentation and the retrieval of information. The results of that system will be presented to you today. Please understand that this is work in progress. Although the project started in 2004, to heart failure and cardiac discharge summaries produced in calendar year 2006. Clearly, this is an evolving process for this facility and one that has demonstrated improvement over time. At this point in time, I would like to turn the call over to Myrna Tantiano, manager of the Quality Management Department, and she will introduce the presenters on today's call. Myrna?
Thank you, Bill. Good morning and welcome. My name is Myrna Tantiano. I am the manager of the Quality Management here in Kingsbrook Jewett Medical Center. We all feel honored and excited to be here with you today, and we would like to thank Dr. Charles Simler and Mr. Bill Gardner for inviting us to share with you what our team has accomplished. Our accomplishment is the product of multidisciplinary team effort, hard work, and dedication from our hospital staff in order to meet the CMS and Jacob Core Measure guidelines and to provide the best quality of care to our patients. I would like to take this opportunity to thank my co-members and team leaders, Dr. Mukherjee and Dr. Malik, for their passion and hard work in doing such a remarkable job. We all know the true meaning of the word team, and we all know we still have a lot more work to do. We have a panel of speakers who will be talking about the initiatives we did to solve the barriers we have identified in dealing with AMI, heart failure, and pneumonia core measures. Each of these speakers spearheaded these initiatives. While some of these projects are still in the process, some projects are complete and we already have seen positive results. Without much further delay, let me introduce our panelists in the sequence of the presentation. Dr. Kurt Kodroff, one of our senior leaders and vice president of quality management, who will give us a general overview of today's conference call, followed by Dr. Rajat Mukherjee, pulmonologist and chief of intensive care unit, who will be talking about the electronic documentation of vaccination and smoking cessation counseling, followed by Dr. Eustace Lashley, director of emergency department, who will be talking about the new ED process using the WellSoft ED information system, followed by Dr. Bisoy Luca, clinical pharmacist of the critical care, who will be talking about the electronic pathway for the appropriate antibiotic selection for pneumonia patients, followed by Dr. Abdul Malik, cardiologist and chief of coronary care unit, who will be talking about electronic MD discharge order pathway, followed by Mr. Albert Bellaro, director of the professional practice development from the Department of Nursing, who will talk about the nursing process in addressing core measures. Unfortunately, Ms. Nympha Mendel is unable to make it today due to some emergency, and we have Melissa Gonzalez, who is Assistant Director and Financial Interfaces and Integration in Clinical Information, will be filling in. And now let me turn it over to Dr. Kurt Kodroff. Dr. Kodroff?
Thank you, Myrna. This is Kurt Kodroff. Just as a general overview, we've adopted as a principle that we would leverage our IT system as much as possible as it relates to our QI initiatives, and specifically integrate the changes we make through the order entry workflow. It's involved many cycles of learning. As Bill pointed out in the introduction, we've had a staggered implementation of these projects with our pneumococcal approach going into effect in 2004 and some of our cardiac changes being implemented early in 2006. And even our antibiotic flow is in the pre-implementation phase. We also are aware strongly aware of the Hawthorne effect for a lot of QI initiatives, and especially in a medium-sized hospital, we could certainly bang the drum and drive up just about any measure, and it's clear that these types of efforts are not sustainable, and that's why our approach has been integration through workflow, leveraging IT. I should also add that, you know, we've by no means solved all the problems. Even in areas of success, we've gone back and met with IT and made adjustments in the system. I think we'll be able to demonstrate an example of that. And there are some areas we're still struggling with, but we do have a very clear approach of integration into the IT system, cycles of learning, and having a team that consists of both IT professionals and clinicians. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Mukherjee, who is chief of our ICU, a pulmonologist who leads the pneumonia core measure project. Dr. Mukherjee?
Hi, I'm Dr. Mukherjee. And again, with regard to the core measures, one of the major problems that comes up initially is the problem of vaccination. And with regard to the influenza and pneumococcal vaccination, right from the start, we identified certain barriers. One, for instance, is incomplete information available to a patient when he comes in. Frequently, the nursing home transfer sheet will not have the necessary information regarding the vaccination status of the patient. The patient himself may be unaware or unsure of what kind of vaccination he received in the recent past. And then again, something that we found was very much of a problem was the difficulty of transferring vaccination history from one admission to the next. I mean, you'd have a patient come into the hospital, the same institution, and yet transferring that information from one admission to the next would frequently require delving into previous charts and so on, and that was really quite a cumbersome process. So the whole process of screening the patient for vaccination, that was an issue. And we went back to IT, and we wanted a system by which there could be electronic documentation of the vaccination history, which would then carry on from admission to admission and would be readily available to our physicians when it was required. So this is what we came up with. The next screen shows, go to number 33, which says enter display diagnosis and vaccination status. You press that, and again, it gives you a menu, and we go straight to number 8, which says vaccination records display, and the next screen tells us that on the 2nd of October, the vaccination, the pneumococcal vaccination was actually ordered and given to the patient. Next screen, sometimes it is necessary to modify the vaccination record. You've received information from some caregiver, from the patient's primary care physician or from the nursing home that the vaccination was given a year ago, so that has to become part of the record. So you press 9, vaccination record modify, and this is something that can be free text in. In October 2005, the patient actually received the vaccination at the nursing home. And that becomes now part of the permanent record that carries on from admission to admission. And finally, if necessary, when a patient hasn't received the vaccination, to order it. So you press 13 meds. The vaccination is ordered, administered, and the moment it's administered and it's documented, the nurse documents it, it becomes part of the record, and that's the documentation that the pneumococcal vaccine was given on such and such date, on 3rd of October, and that becomes permanently recorded in the patient's history. And as you can see here in this chart, when we first started in 2003, our our numbers were rather low, but after implementation of the system, our numbers improved dramatically. One thing I was just asked to point out to you, something that we're sort of rather proud of, is that we realized when it comes to documentation, this kind of transferring information from one admission to another, the only information that is readily available for such a thing is allergies. Allergies is something that most of these, that the software will provide information from one admission to another. So what we did was our IT system rather brilliantly did was tag on the vaccination history to the allergy system, to the allergy history, and make it a part of that. Okay, so the next issue that came up, among others, was smoking cessation counseling. I mean, you would think that would be rather relatively easy, but what we found was that the number of active smokers are rather a small proportion of patients admitted to an acute hospital. At least that's what we found. And as a result of the small proportion, smoking cessation counseling tends to fall by the wayside. So the initiatives that we thought about it, and we decided that the only way you could really solve this issue was to have pointers made that at the time of discharge, you would have a sort of prompt, screen prompting. The physician discharging the patient would be prompted to address the whole issue of smoking, and then electronic documentation would result. So as you can see in the next screen, this is the screen that appears to a physician who is about to discharge a patient, and when an order is written to discharge the patient, as you can see, we go to the next screen, which, among other questions, which again Dr. Malik with his acute MI protocol and CHF will also get back to, there is a question further down the line, is the patient a smoker? And if the answer is yes, the next screen appears, which gives the physician the options, all the options that are required, whether smoking cessation advice was given, if medications were offered, and referral to a smoking cessation clinic, which as a result of this initiative we actually did open. It's been around for about a year now, and we provided educational material. Once any or all of these are entered, you get to come to the next screen, which gives you the final documentation of discharge. And there you can see in the last two lines or three lines, smoking cessation advice given, medications were offered, we referred to the smoking cessation clinic, and in the next slide, educational materials provided, etc. So as a result of this initiative, as you can see, our numbers regarding the smoking cessation issue have improved rather well. Okay, so I'll now hand this over to Dr. Lashley, who will be talking about the whole problem with antibiotic timing in the emergency room.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Lashley, I'm the Director of Emergency Medicine. And as you know, over the years, we in emergency medicine have been aware that the ED has become more or less the portal for a significant number of admissions to the emergency, to the hospital. And because of this, we are more or less involved in the core measures as the initiators of the process. If you look at this slide, which is on page 26 of your handout, you should see slide number 26, you should see that we have issues or problems achieving our goal of giving antibiotics under 4 hours. If you look at the next slide, we show there are percentage. In the last quarter of 2005, we were up there close to 70. Then we dropped down by the third quarter of 2005, and we hovered around 50%. Because of this, we realized that there are certain things that were hindrance to our process. So we got back to IT and had them look at some of the things that we had were prolonged ED registration time, delays in generating a chart. It was a cumbersome system that we're doing the dual process, and that we were using both the electronic medical record and paper orders, and this is that the antibiotics were not readily available in the ED. So what we did, we went to the IT people, and we tried, and we got with them, and we were able to initiate a quick registration system, and then we were able to work with our triage nurses and able to identify patients who might be part of the core measures, that we color-coded them, and this is that we were able to enable the antibiotics and in the critical time, by using working with pharmacy, we had developed the Omni service that allows us to keep the antibiotics available in the ED, and also this is what we're doing to make sure that this process where we're having this concurrent review of the process. This is our new electronic medical record. What this allows us to do is to really get a hold of, see exactly what's going on in the ED at any particular time. And what you're looking at is actually our tracking board. And if you look at column number 7 with the chief complaint, you see like the first and the second and the third picture from the top, you'll notice that it's kind of shaded. And what that is, that shaded color is actually pink. So the physician and the nurses working the ED see anything that's colored pink, they know that this is a core measure patient and the process starts working. Also, what it allows us to do, if you look at it, column number 11, which gives you arrival, it allows us to track the time that the patient has been in. This is very critical for us because it allows us to know what time we're working against, and we can manage our time efficiently in that manner. On the next slide, you'll see we've developed order sets. So we have order sets working with IT. We're able to have order sets for abdominal pain, chest pain, fever, different things. But the one that we're going to talk about is the one for the pneumonia. And this order set allows nursing to initiate the process. They can order the blood work, blood cultures, which is very crucial, and get this ball working, going before the physician actually sees the patient. And then based on that, we're able to hopefully improve the process. At this time, we'll turn over to Dr. Bashoy from pharmacy.
Good morning, everyone. At this time, I'm going to describe to you our process and how we handle the core measure of appropriate antibiotic selection. The first chart that you see
shows our performance in the ICU setting, and you can see that there's regions which require dramatic improvement. And the second slide, it depicts our non-ICU setting, and you see that there are times which we still have much room for improvement, but what you also see is a positive trend towards improvement. And we feel that this positive trend stems from the fact that we have devised pocket algorithms and heavily in-serviced our medical residents upon the antibiotic selection. And what we realize is that we need to devise computer algorithms to help augment this effect as well as to try to maintain consistency. We found in our concurrent review that there is both an under and overutilization of antibiotics within both the ICU and the non-ICU setting. And so we devised computerized pathways to assist in antibiotic selection using computerized physician order entry. And so when a physician orders a particular agent, he or she is introduced to question prompts through the electronic ordering system, and this steers prescribers to selecting the most appropriate antimicrobial agent. We devised six different algorithms so far, one specifically for levofloxacin, ciprofloxacin, clindamycin, macrolide, anti-pseudomonal beta-lactams, as well as non-pseudomonal beta-lactams. These haven't gone live yet. They're still in the fine tweaking stages, and what we'll display to you today is the levofloxacin pathway as well as the anti-pseudomonal beta-lactam pathway. When a physician comes to order levofloxacin, the first question that appears would state, is the medication for the treatment of pneumonia? If the physician selects no, then a screen appears allowing them to type in exactly which condition they're using it for, and that will justify that agent for that particular condition. However, if it is for managing pneumonia, a second question would ask, is the patient penicillin allergic? If the answer is yes, then a warning would appear stating, in non-ICU patients, fluoroquinolone should not be combined with another antibiotic for the management of pneumonia according to JACO and IPRO guidelines unless one of the risk factors apply. And then they would select any risk factors that would apply, and they are hospitalization for 2 days within the last 90 days, residence in an extended care facility, a dialysis patient, a patient receiving home wound care, has a comorbid immunosuppressive condition, or they could simply select none apply, and they would read the message. According to JACO and IPRO guidelines, they should reconsider their choice of antimicrobial agent at that time. However, if the patient is not penicillin allergic, you will see in the next slide that no was selected under patient is not penicillin allergic. And that setting a third question would appear asking, is the medication for a patient in the ICU or is going to the ICU? If the answer is yes, the medication is ordered. However, in the next slide, you will see that no was selected. And if no was selecting, then a fourth question would appear, is the patient to receive or is already receiving a beta-lactam or a macrolide? Now, if they're not going to combine levofloxacin with a beta-lactam and the answer is no, then the medication is ordered. However, if they are going to combine it, you'll see in the next slide that yes, it's selected, then a warning would appear stating, according to the Joint Commission guidelines, the combination of a beta-lactam or a macrolide with a fluoroquinolone for the management of pneumonia in non-ICU patients is not recommended unless one of the risk factors apply. And we also state that it is mandatory to select one of the risk factors. And then they would see the risk factors and select one of them, and all of these data is well documented and is capturable, or they could simply select none apply. Now, the next algorithm that I'd like to display is the anti-pseudomonal algorithm, for example, piperacillin tazobactam. When a physician comes to order an anti-pseudomonal beta-lactam, the first question similarly, again, is this for the treatment of pneumonia? If it is yes, the second question that appears would be, is the medication for a patient in the ICU or going to the ICU? Now, if the patient is not going to the ICU and is not already in the ICU, then a warning would appear, use of anti-pseudomonal beta-lactams for the treatment of pneumonia is not recommended outside the ICU setting as per JACO and IPRO guidelines unless certain risk factors apply. And additionally, we would go on to say when treating pneumonia, beta-lactams should not be combined with fluoroquinolones outside the ICU setting as an educational piece for them to know, and then they would go and select any of the anti-pseudomonal risk factors. Now, if there are no pseudomonal risk factors, this does not cause a hard stop for physicians. They're still able to order their medication. However, it is a very good educational tool. They would simply click none apply, the medication is ordered, and they would also read the message. According to JACO and IPRO guidelines, they should reconsider their choice of agent.
Now, if the patient is going to the ICU, then a third question would appear, is the patient at suitable risk? If they, simply by selecting yes, is justifies its use and is considered to be considered form of documentation of suitable risk, and then they would simply get the medication. However, if the patient, if the physician selects not at suitable risk and they select no, they might say no because they might not be aware of all the suitable risk factors. And so it serves as another educational piece, and a warning would say use of anti-suitable beta-lactams is permitted by Jacobin IPRO guidance only if the patient is at suitable risk. And so they would go on to select risk factors of Pseudomonas. And the following risk factors are also the same. They would select it, and it's very, this information is capturable and is well documented. And this concludes the core measure regarding to antibiotic selection. I'll then hand the floor over to Dr. Malik.
Hi, good morning. My name is Abdul Malik, and I spearhead two core measures, which is acute myocardial infarction and congestive heart failure for Kingsbrook Jewish. All the exciting talk of pneumonia, I think you are saturated, and we'll talk a little bit more exciting stuff of acute MI and CHF now. We're going to start with two slides. And just to reiterate what we have said before, that we do have a gloomy quarter. One quarter is do very well, the other quarter is not. So we are not really perfect, only a perfection. But, you know, our process is what we really hate to talk about. And this is for the left ventricular function systolic function assessment, which really most of the time means echocardiographic assessment. And, you know, even though we are saying most of the quarters well above 80, but there's some quarters we do have fluctuation. Next slide, please. The next is, which is really important, is ACE or ARBs for the patients whose left ventricular systolic function is found to be less than 40% or moderate to severe dysfunction, and the usage of one of these agents. And we do have a consistently fairly good rate starting from the last quarter of the 2004. Having said that, we're going to go over some of the identified barriers for left ventricular systolic function assessment. Firstly is that the previous, it is not really mandated that every time we have to do a left ventricular function assessment, if there's a previously available, which is unfortunately most of the time it wasn't available or readily available. Second was some of the misunderstanding that echo is the only means of left ventricular systolic function assessment. Patients can go for cardiac catheterization in certain institutes, and if that report is available, usually left ventricular assessment is a part of that. A MUGA scan or a gated nuclear images doing stress testing can be acceptable way of assessing the left ventricular function. Second part, as far as the ASOARBs usages, the lack of physician understanding in the setting of moderate to severe left ventricular dysfunction in the absence of clinical heart failure or what we call overt CHF. And also, there's a lot of ambiguity about the contraindications and lack of, what we say, is lack of justified contraindications documentation. Okay, so having said that, how do you really solve all that problem? And we have, you know, and I have to take you a little bit before we look at the slide. Firstly, you know, you really have to go around and educate your staff. Being a part of an institute which has a residency program, somewhat we have a leverage, relatively easy, where we have a much easier way of communicating to those physicians and we can get them together at times. Second part is there are two really major issues. One is initiating, for example, acute MI. The ED is the major focus of some of these core measures. And Dr. Lashley, who was talking earlier, some of these things being implemented in the ED, the aspirin and the beta blocker and thrombolytic, they're really the ED domain. So the second part comes the communication, education, and the software development in the ED, which was demonstrated earlier. And the third is, what do you do with patient before they're discharged? That is not to say that is the only system we have, but that is a redundant system which we put in place. All of those efforts have been done. how staff is educated, the nursing staff is educated, medical staff is educated, but less, we all human beings. And what do? So we have over here is the before a patient is being discharged, and some of the slides you earlier was seen by Dr. Mukherjee, if the congestive heart failure is selected, then this question prompts up on the screen. And as I mentioned, this institute, a patient cannot be discharged until the order input is in place in the computer by the physician to discharge the patient. So when the screen pops up, if congestive heart failure is diagnosed and is selected, first it will come about the discharge instruction. And it has all the pertinent things which are the part of our core measure, six of them. Discharge medication, weight monitoring, diet, activity level, follow-up appointment, and what to do if symptoms worsen. Next is, if patient's left ventricular systolic function was assessed or not. In case patient is discharged for various reasons before such a test is done, was patient scheduled and what was the date? Third is, if the systolic function is assessed and it's found to be 40% or below, or it's moderate to severe dysfunction, then we have to go to the next slide, please. Then the question will come up, was patient given ACE or ARBs? And if not, we have to select one of these choices. So that makes actually a redundant system. Any physician who is discharging, having gone through everything, and before patient is discharged, they can really look at the thing. Not that we want physician to wait till the discharge, but this is really a redundant system to remind them. Okay, and this is the printout which will come at the end, that what was the patient, and this will be a part of our record. Next slide, I will go straight to the, okay, next, this is again, if the diagnosis is acute MI, the question is patient is a smoker, and next slide, please. And again over here, acute MI, if any patient was given aspirin or not, patient was given beta blocker or not, any allergies, and any contraindication, next please. And if patient has LV systolic dysfunction, was patient prescribed ACE or ARBs, or was there any contraindication? We have gone through this slide pretty much in the previous. And then again, we are going a little bit ahead of the time, which is really part of eighth scope of ICRO, also measurement of cholesterol. And we have in detail the was it done, and if it was if it was more than 130 LDL, was patient started on lipid-lowering medication? Next, please. And then you can see this is the printout. So I think I'm just going to wrap it up and give it to the next speaker. This is basically a redundant system. We made it. And I think we have started to see some of the results. And we'll be open for questions.
My name is Albert Villaro, and I'm here to talk about how the Department of Nursing contributed to the achievement of the improvements in the three core measures that we're talking about today. Early on, the Department of Nursing has accepted the responsibility that in order to improve the discharge instruction performance in CHF in particular, we have to put it in context and take the ownership of taking charge of the initiative and putting it in context in terms of affecting the readmission of patients due to the heart failure diagnosis. We all know that the behaviors that the patients take home with them in terms of the discharge instruction is what prevents them from being readmitted in the hospital, and we know that that is the context that we should put this initiative into. And early on, those contacts and data that we get from the core measures meeting that we did was fed to our bedside staff in order for them to have an appreciation of, what the core measures and what context it's supposed to be. We also realized that we have an IT system that can give us tons of information in terms of giving us some direction as to what patients we need to focus on that have the CHF diagnosis or pneumonia diagnosis. So we realized that we can use this data in order to focus our efforts to those patients that have these diagnoses. One of our difficulties in the beginning was to identify patients who had the diagnosis, and at the middle of the admission, the diagnosis that are added in seem to be missed, and therefore we end up being late in the game where we realize that a patient is CHF and on discharge missed the opportunity to give the discharge instruction. So using information technology, we realized that if we use clinical triggers, we could use that to zoom in our efforts into the discharge. And so we have initiated a reporting system from IS where patients that are on ACE inhibitors and ARBs are given to the nursing staff on a daily basis, and this is then used by the nursing staff to begin discharge instructions early in the patient's day and make sure that the discharge instruction is completed at the time of the patient's discharge. So this was a big help for us to focus our attention to those patients. We also initiated some reporting for patients who have a pneumonia diagnosis, and this was also given to our staff, and the efforts about vaccination blood culture timing and standing orders are also improved based on this context. The concurrent review of our charts was really given to our line staff, and so leadership challenge and support was important because our accountability was then shifted to the staff, and the staff buy-in really what made this happen in terms of making the concurrent review possible and improving our discharge performance. We also instituted a mechanism of flagging charts once we've identified the patients that have CHF, and therefore our staff efforts were focused on improving the discharge documentation on those charts. We were also heavily involved with making sure that the discharge instructions are 100% because we operated on the premise that we have to give 100% of the discharge instruction components to our staff or otherwise get no credit at all. And finally, the credit really needs to be placed to our line staff and the two managers who have significantly contributed to this effort, who are in attendance with us today. And the credit is really to their benefit because the discharge instructions could not have happened without any staff buy-in and you know, owning the system as a whole. And I'm going to turn it over to Melissa from IS.
Well, good morning. This is Melissa Gonzalez. I'm here representing for Mindell. There's not much more for me to say because everyone well represented a lot of the efforts that we put in place to meet the core measure requirements as well as streamline any clinical staff intervention with the applications and the systems. In finalization between the Link system, which is our CPOE system, as well as WellSoft, which is our ED EMR system, you know, every success that we've had in implementing any changes to any application has been a collaboration between the team members that have spoken here today and IT. And we would not have the successes if we didn't have the input from each and every member that's here today to work with us, troubleshoot with us, give us the input that we needed to go back and do the changes that we needed to do in the system. And if anybody leaves us anything, it's very important to understand that the clinical input is very important in everything that we do with any system changes because we are building it for them. So I just want to put that in.
That concludes our presentation, Bill.
Yes, thank you, Myrna, and thank you, everyone, for your presentation. At this point in time, I'd like to open up the lines to questions to see whether anybody who's listening has any questions for you. Jai, do you want to open up the line?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Once again, if you do have a question, please press 1.
Actually, I would like to ask a question. This is Bill Gardner again. It seems like with the implementation of your record, the ability for you to have the information at your disposal and collect the information is great, but I would like somebody to comment on the amount of time that you put into implementing the process. It seems like whatever we do here with an electronic medical record, you know, you can have the information at your disposal, but in order to make the process onset, it seems like you've always all sent pieces of education to your staff, your frontline staff, your residents. And if you could talk a little bit about the time and effort that you spend upon implementation.
Well, this is Dr. Mukherjee. I can tell you from personal experience that it was quite a saga. We started off with very poor numbers. The one good thing that we had at our disposal was a very willing medical resident staff who worked with us, and we were given constant feedback. For instance, simple things that I told you, we came up with this whole issue of transferring information, working with IT, coming up, hitting upon this whole aspect of linking information to the allergy system and so on. And then, even simple things like free texting in, you know, messages saying that a patient received his vaccination a couple of years ago was not simple. We had to change the whole system, the screens and so on, until that became available relatively recently. As you can see, the pneumonia algorithms are still in progress. All along the way, we've been working with people. We meet about at least every month, but more frequently. And what can I say? It's just trial and error in most circumstances, and a lot of time spent by everyone. So if you think that it's going to happen overnight, it's not. It's something that whoever attempts to do, something that's going to take time and a lot of, meetings and discussions and so on, and input from everyone.
Yes. Thank you.
In addition to what Dr. Mukherjee said, you know, most of the legwork is up front, just having the discussions with the department who's requesting the change. And, you know, depending on the change, it could take a month, it could take a couple of weeks. It depends on how major, how minor the change is and how much it affects the pathways of the, you know, the clinical staff. Because, you know, a simple change can be a matter of sending some documentation to the management staff and kind of having them review it with their staff and then implement it a week later. Some changes may take, you know, a couple of months because we have to get people to come in and train because it's a major overhaul of their current pathways. So, you know, each different project, each different step of any change is different in time parameters. If it's a whole system implementation like we have with the EMR system, it'll be a couple of months because we have months of, you know, just discussions and tables and building, and then we, you know, once we have that set up, then it's a matter of organizing training for the nursing and the physician staff to get them to come in and at least get a feel of the application before we can schedule a go live. So it really depends on the magnitude of the change that's being implemented.
Hi, this is Dr. Malik. I'll add to what the has said before me. It also is that as a group, we also divided amongst ourselves the responsibility, or what we say, taking charge of. And then we follow that. And if that, and you know, each of us or any of us has to involve multiple departments, administration, we went all the way. Or going back to the resident, going to IT people. So we took a sort of a charge. And I'm happy to really even say that we have a new nursing administration for a year and a half, and they have been very instrumental in that also. So that has helped us a lot in the recent past.
Thank you. Jai, do you have any questions from the participants?
I show no questions. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone.
Bill?
Yes,
Dr. Hi, Stiller. This is Dr. Stiller. I have one question that may have been touched on in part, but I thought if folks wanted to expand a little on it, I'd be very interested to hear how the conversation proceeds, a little bit some more details about the interface between IT and the clinical folks in terms of how the back and forth often goes. And,
Hi, this is Dr. Luca responding. Well, in terms of interfacing between IT and the clinical knowledge, I'll tell you, by working on the pneumonia algorithms initially, we had no idea that we'd end up with such an elaborate system. It was really just coming up with suggestions and asking them if it's possible. And once they see what kind of vision or what kind of goals we're trying to achieve, they would then tell us what kind of services they can provide or what kind of things that they are able to do, and then we try to customize it over, you know, like Dr. Mukherjee mentioned, you know, meeting once a week or once or twice a week just to see what we can do. And it really started off as just a very bare skeleton or just one or two pop-up messages for when a physician orders an antibiotic, and it developed into a very elaborate system. So it really comes down to the motivation of everybody on the team to really aim for one particular goal. And once we get that one vision, we pretty much can almost do anything based on the technology that's available.
In the case of the Department of Nursing, it was just a simple data mining operation where, for example, we had an idea from our core measures meeting that perhaps patients on ACE and ARBs would have the diagnosis of heart failure tied with them. So we interfaced with IT and said, can we get that information and can we give that to our staff? And it was just a simple giving us a report that we can channel to our staff in order to zoom in on those kinds of patients.
I have an additional question. It seems like you're able to thoroughly customize the changes that you would like to implement. And was this an intentional decision on your part to purchase such a system that you would manage? And how did you end up going in that direction? Because I know that sometimes when you work with a vendor, the customization of reports and you know the way you want your fields is really a kind of a purchase on demand type system. Whereas it seems like your internal and your in-house ability to do this is far greater than sometimes is normally seen.
Well, I think that one of the things that we definitely do whenever we're going to purchase or implement an application, you know, we kind of do our homework, and before we go to meet with the vendor, we have a basic guideline of, you know, ideas of what we're going to expect from the application, and also walk in with the expectation that we can also add on and modify certain functionalities to meet future needs. You know, we always look at several vendors. We don't just go with the first one that comes and knocks on our door. And we make sure that we also have, you know, training on these applications to be able to do our own in-house modification, because we're not big on depending on the vendor to make any changes that we need. Major, maybe, you know, we do contract with them, but we try to keep it internal so that we can have a quick turnaround time for any requests that come our way. So I think that's one of the big things, that when we go in, you know, to meet with the vendor and to discuss an application prior to purchasing, we kind of find out exactly what their limitations are and whether or not they're going to meet our expectations for the future.
Yeah, and this is Dr. Lasher. A good example of that for the minister is the implementation of the WellSolve system. We were able to customize that for the core measures by, you know, by having that change in color of patients who we suspect might be core measure. That comes up as pink so that the whole clinical staff is able to focus on these patients and make sure that they get they fall into the guidelines and get whatever is required.
Thank you. Jai, you want to check for questions again?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone.
And if anybody else from iPro has any questions, please feel free to ask.
I show no questions.
Hi, this is Dr. Stimler. I just wanted to make a comment. I think that Kingsbrook has done and what they've presented on this call is really great, really important. I think it will apply to some hospitals, perhaps not all, but I hope it may serve sort of as an inspiration for some hospitals that have their own IT systems or are thinking of developing or expanding an IT system to realize that there are clearly ways in which hospitals can customize these systems so that they can be helpful in fulfilling the core measure performance requirements, and that you know, there are ways that have been demonstrated by Kingsbrook today that hospital processes, such as educational processes and interdisciplinary meetings and all of that, can help assist the IT systems in working together to accomplish these goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stimler. At this point in time, I would...
Bill?
Yes.
This is Suzanne Columbus.
Yes.
I was wondering if Deborah could ask a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, this is to the hospital itself. You talked about vendors, and you discussed in the beginning that you purchased the system back in 96. Is it the same system that you purchased back in 96 that you were able to add these additional pieces that was all interoperable so that you can eventually add the order entry system into it?
Yes.
Or it's all WellSoft?
No, it's actually Envision. Envision, WellSoft is a separate application, an EMR system which interfaces with our Envision system. Envision is a clinical system that we purchased back in 96, and this is the one that we've still had the ability today to make some changes to help, you know, meet the needs.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me, this is the operator. We do have one question on the phone line.
Sure.
From Catherine Riley. Please go ahead. Ms. Riley, your line is open.
Catherine, do you have your phone on mute?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. My question relates to the amount of effort or time required to get the data in a ready state for transmission to the vendor for submission to CMS. What is your process for actually transferring your information that you have in your electronic medical record to the abstract form for submission, and what staff actually does that?
When we're doing a chart abstraction, we're using some paper documentation and as well as electronic documentation. With the availability of the electronic documentation, sometimes when doing concurrent review, you don't even have to leave the office to do a concurrent review. But with the abstraction submitting for CMS and JCO, you actually need paper documentation and electronic documentation. And with these two documentation available, it will probably take 15 minutes the most for one chart. Is that what you want me to, is that clarify your question? Bill?
Yes. Catherine's gone, or Kathy's gone. At this point in time, I would like to thank Kingsbrook Jewish for their presentation. I hope that you've taken away some substance from this call as far as how it can be done and some of the barriers to actually doing it. I would like to remind you that this conference call is being recorded, and as soon as we have the recording, we will post it on to Jenny, and I will send everyone the link for that. For the recording of the call. So if anybody you wanted to have listened to the call today was not able to join you, you will have the opportunity to listen to the call. In addition, as far as today's attachments go, there was an evaluation form, and I would remind you to please fill that out. PACSPAC's instructions are on the bottom of the form, and we do take evaluations into consideration for the formation of our next conference calls and how we can actually improve upon the process. Again, thank you all for your participation on today's call, and have a good morning.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may all disconnect and have a wonderful day.